Hey, Renter Retires, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode, joined as usual by the founder and CEO of Renter Retirement, Zach LeMaster. We are joined today by Dan Austin. He is the host of the Collecting Keys podcast. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Thanks, Zach. I'm excited. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, so let's go back to your early days.
Yeah.
Obviously, you were born and raised in real estate and bought your first property at 12, right?
I wish, man. I wish, dude. Oh my gosh. I didn't know what I wanted to be growing up necessarily. I knew something had to do something with owning assets. And I always knew like real estate, like people with wealth own real estate. And it seemed like if you own more, you'd be wealthier. But I did not take action on that right away because I just didn't know. I ended up joining the military right out of high school when I was 18. This was back in like late 2003, 2004. And from there, just was like doing the military thing, really liked it. But one of my goals, misdirected at the time, but I know all of my mistakes now, was I wanted to get a college degree. So I went to college, earned a degree as an electrical engineer. And I just thought like that was going to be my path. Like you go and you get a good job as an engineer. I have a college degree. Nobody else in my family has one. I was like, man, I am on the path. And I got into corporate America after leaving the military, which was like this just great time of being with just really great, you know, men and women that, you know, you're always mission driven and people were passionate about what they're doing. And it was exciting. Went from that to becoming an engineer, which meant you sat at a desk all the time. And then in corporate America is its own beast. It's not for everybody. And I kind of found like I didn't suck at it. I liked it. I was doing okay at it, but that just wasn't like the lifestyle I was hoping to live. And so I started like reaching out and finding new ways to really engage myself and you know, not, for, you know, for lack of better terms, like not be bored, because you can do your job in a W-2 world and still have all this passion and excitement for doing other things. And so that's when, coming to 2016, I found real estate, and like it was kind of like the aha moment for me. And I was like, okay, this is both entrepreneurship, which I always had this passion to own a business. I just didn't know how to do it. And also like wealth building, which I always, you know, I was like, if I can get that freedom coming from where I did in my childhood, having that sense of financial freedom was important to me. And so that's when I bought my first single family home. And then from there, it's all history, as they say.
And now, did you ever, I mean, being a veteran, have you taken advantage of the VA loan, or has it all been, you know, conventional or, you know, DSCR loans, or how have you been getting your financing?
Yeah, so I do take advantage of my VA loan on my primary residence. Like I never thought about it as an investing strategy for no good reason. I know lots of people that do it, but most all of my loans have always been just straight up conventional, or I'll do like commercial portfolio loans to like my credit union with, you know, typical like 7-10 year balloons.
Dan, really interesting story, and thank you for sharing that with us. I want to revisit a little bit. So you talked about the corporate world, and I have a very similar background, actually. The same thing. I was the first one out of my entire family to go to college, and I was very proud of this track I was on. And it's not that in healthcare, at least for me, I didn't necessarily hate that track, but yeah. It's just when I found real estate, it's like, oh, there's way more that we can do and create a lifestyle and still do the healthcare thing. Mm-hmm. But I want to, you mentioned you found real estate in 2016, and this was a combination of entrepreneurship and wealth building. But I want to dive a little bit deeper into that. So there's a lot of different things you could do like in business outside of the corporate world, but like, can you define that a little bit more for us about like real estate? Like what else was really, just being really specific, what was it about real estate that attracted you? Like, hey, this is a thing that I want to start doing.
Yeah. So a few things, actually. The first thing is, at least the initially, like the allure towards real estate is it's passive. So you can work your day job, which I was not about to quit because I bought one property, right? Like you can work your day job and you can set the property up to operate, and you obviously collect rent, you know, when you're sleeping, you know, ideally. And nobody, you know, I always like the joke of like, oh, you got all these crappy tenants and these toilets that go bad in the middle of the night. It's like they don't, because nobody has a bad toilet in the middle of the night. I don't ever have that. And my tenants never have that issue. So it is somewhat passive. But the cool thing about it is the way I look at my properties is I like to look at them as their own businesses, and I treat them as their own little businesses. Doesn't mean like they're separate portfolio wise, but they're just, it's an operating business where you have a balance sheet and a P&L. And so it itches that scratch for me. And I really do see it, my portfolio, as its own entity and business. But the most important thing for me was the benefit of being able to scrape out the income while working my day job. And then the idea was, oh, if I buy 10 of these, I was cash flowing, like actually clean cash flow, because it was a student rental. So I had a little bit higher cash flow, $800 a month on that first property. And I was like, 10 of these times that by eight, that's 8,000. That was like a little bit more than my salary at the time as an engineer.
Yeah, that's super cool. I think when looking back at my journey in real estate and what got me excited about real estate and as I learned more about real estate over the years, it's like I actually became more passionate and more excited because of all the additional benefits that mm-hmm. real estate offers that no other like business and asset class does when you're investing. But right out of the gates, I remember that it was really simple to me. It was simple math, right? Like, and I used a VA loan, for example, with my first primary, which was on a duplex. And so I house hacked it. I was like, oh, this is a cool concept. And then I was able to use leverage to buy another asset that then, you know, cash flowed. And then I was able to I could reverse engineer the math to say, hey, this is a very scalable plan to just be able to predictably buy more and more real estate. Right. But then I started to learn more about like the tax benefits, using leverage more strategically, and you know, partnering with other people. It's just, I mean, there's, you know, the sky's the limit, and the rest is history. Let's talk about your first deal, though. I know Adam always wants to drill down on people's first deals. Tell us about that first house in 2016.
Yeah. Okay. So this is how it all played out. I was working in my cubicle, and I hear this guy over these, you know, rows of cubicle. It was kind of late in the afternoon, and so there wasn't a lot of people in the office. And I hear this something, yeah, I own rental properties. And I was like, oh, man. I got out of my cubicle, walked around, introduced myself to this guy. He's a really good friend of mine today. Basically shook his hand and like, oh, I heard you own rental properties. I would love to know more. And I had literally no idea about real estate or anything like that. I just had this kind of concept that I think it's where I want to be. So we developed a relationship over the next few months. And I started understanding to analyze deals and all that stuff. And he was specifically in like this small pocket where I'm at here in Spokane, Washington, in the north side of the town, near our university. And he was specifically doing student rentals, and he had like maybe three or four at the time. And he was a licensed broker in the side. So I was like, this guy's got all these side hustles and I'm only listing two of them. And he's working a day job. I was like, this is really cool. I think I want to get into this. And so that probably happened around in the early 2015. It wasn't until 2016, I think, that I actually made my first investment, just due to I had to move out of town for a bit for a job and I came back. And essentially what it was he called me and he said, hey, Dan, I know you're interested in real estate. There's this deal on the MLS that I would love to take down, but I just bought a deal. I'm out of cash. Like, do you want it? I'll help you buy it. And I looked at it and it was listed for $205,000. And at that time, the market rent for those houses was about $2,100. So it hit that magical 1% rule we've all heard about. I don't even know if I knew what that was at the time, but I was kind of running the numbers and I was like, I think this makes money every month. But I was so scared to do this. I reached out to another friend and I was like, hey, would you want to partner with me on this deal? And he's like, yeah, sure. And so him and I walked it and it was kind of grungy, but it wasn't that bad. Like it was move-in ready, but it needed like $20,000 worth of work, maybe less than that. I can't remember. And anyways, long story short, I decided not to partner on it. And I just jumped in, even though I was scared. I was like, let's just do it. I've got the money to put the down payment on this and do some minor renovations, which is exactly what I did. I bought it traditionally, $205,000, put the down payment on it. I had to do some like new kitchen cabinets. I redid a bathroom in the basement, maybe painted some walls, and then got it rented out. And I was literally, like I said earlier, $800 a month. I was like, this is magic. Like, how do I do this all the time now?
Yeah. And you mentioned kind of treating it like a business. Did you start like that first property? Did you view it as a business and set it up like a business immediately? Or was it something that you kind of grew into as you grew your investing? So, and if that is the case, how did you swap it over?
Right. So I didn't know what I know now about anything. And so initially, I'm an engineer. So engineers tend to like find real estate because it's a lot of numbers. Everything you can break down in numbers. So I was good at math. And so I definitely looked at it as like, okay, so this business generates this much revenue and I have all these expenses. One thing I'll say is I did not understand the balance sheet, which speaks to the benefits when we're talking about like depreciation and how to use leverage properly. But I just understood from the fundamentals, it was revenue, expenses, and profit. And I just saw that as one entity. And I quickly bought the house next door, I would say. I shouldn't say quickly, but I bought the house next door and then saw that as a separate entity as well. But I did not know any of that stuff. And I will say the one bit of education I did get in the traditional education was I have an MBA, and some of the classes around finance and accounting really taught me how to understand the financial statements, which now I see, you know, fast forward several years, now I see my properties on my financial statement and how that actually flows down into my bank account ultimately.
You mean basically what you're talking about, let me paraphrase and tell me if I'm getting this correct, but and this is common, I think, of most newer investors. This is why I want to point it out. But when you first started investing, you were like just focused on the simple math, right? The cash flow, right?
Yep.
The money out of pocket, this is all my expenses, income at the end of the day, and this cash flow going back into my pocket. But you maybe didn't fully understand or pay attention to what I would consider the bigger aspects of investing, the appreciation, the depreciation, the leverage aspect, the tax benefits. So you didn't really factor those in. Is that accurate?
I had no idea. I thought when I learned about depreciation, I didn't think it applied to me. I was like, nah, I'm good. It does, like, no, like I'm a dumb person. I'm a slow learner. And so like, I just did not get it. The appreciation I understood, but I was like, oh man, this house probably won't go up in value like that much. I was like, maybe it just wasn't a benefit. I was only focused on cash flow, which you're pointing out, Zach, is like kind of a mistake. You have the other benefits, the cash flow. Now, when I look at properties, like that is a given. I call it my defensive metric. Like I need to have cash flow on a property, but I'm investing for the other benefits.
Yeah. I mean, that's so common just over time, and that's okay. The best thing you can do is like use that. I mean, if you're focused on cash flow, because that's the simple direct math, fantastic. Yep. That still leads you down the same path of buying the property, right? And owning the property over time is when you really reap the benefits that you maybe don't, that aren't as tangible.
Yeah. And I would add to that, like the thing that I wish I would have known or understood that sooner was I excluded a lot of things that were actually deals because I wasn't understanding the value of those other things. So the first few years of my story, I wasn't able to buy a lot of real estate because I was only focused on the one singular benefit, which was cash flow, which again, like to your point, Zach, if you got cash flow, great. Like you should buy that. Like that's a good asset. But I there were some deals where I was like, oh, it probably won't cash flow right now. And I wasn't thinking about the future opportunities of the appreciation, the depreciation, the type of leverage I could get and the refinancing. I didn't even like burring was not a thing when I was like, it obviously existed, but I wasn't like, oh, I should refinance this. On my first several deals, I was like, oh, you just buy it and you put your money into it. I was like, burring, no, not for me, until I realized the benefit of doing that for myself.
I want to, I love that, Dan. And before we move on to talk about all the cool stuff you're doing now, I just want to make sure we point out a couple things that you said early on that I forgot, and I want to make sure the audience catches that. You made the statement, you treat each individual property as a business, and you know, I think that's really important. We always talk about, you know, building your business around real estate. One of my mentors and the person that I kind of worked under in North Dakota, which when I was in the Air Force and deployed to North Dakota, he always talked about like little oil wells, right? Each one of his little properties was his own little oil well. And I just thought that was a really fun concept of it's just turning out. It requires some maintenance, but it's just turning out income, right?
Yep.
And the more oil wells you can have, you know, over long term, the better off you're going to be.
Yep.
You mentioned it can be set up passive. Obviously, you know, real estate is not completely passive, and it can be extremely active sometimes. Yep. Guess what, guys? News here, flash. Real estate takes work. Even if you're buying turnkey, right? Like going through the financing process. I literally just closed a new construction property in Alabama yesterday, and I'm like, I really hate dealing with lenders, man. They were asking everything. So it can be active. But you can ultimately establish it to be passive. And I think we are both in the scenario where we're like, we left previous career paths, Adam as well, to be in real estate full time. So all of us can relate to this. But I want to make it abundantly clear, too, that I think the beautiful thing about real estate is that it can be this side hustle where it can be somewhat passive, where you can have this side hustle business that you don't, you know, it's producing additional income and it's growing over time and it's growing your net worth. You really don't spend a lot of time on, and you can still do for a lot of people, especially some of our investors, maybe the best thing for you to do is actually stay in your day job, right? And we're talking about a career path change completely for you, Dan, and that's what we both went through, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's right for everyone. You can certainly build this as a side hustle easily with limited hours, and you still plan that early exit, that early retirement, or maybe you're scaling back. I mean, I just think that's a cool thing about real estate is it can be that side hustle. Would you agree with that, or any additional thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. Like that, the thing is not everybody wants to own 1,000 units. Not everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. Not everybody wants the same thing that people that they hear on podcasts want. But there's always that element of what you're saying is that real estate, you can set that up while doing other things. You could, a lot of people I know that invest in real estate are also business owners too, because they're like, I'm not going to give up my business owning this franchise or owning this, I don't know, construction company. It's like, I have a lot of money that I need to place to invest. And I believe in real estate. I don't want to invest it all in the stock market. And maybe they're saying, they're talking to their accountant. They're like, hey, I want the tax benefits of this real estate too. I want to save on taxes. So they're investing in real estate. So I see that the same as like the W-2 employee. It's like, you may love your job. You may want to continue to scale that job. You may be a high earner. You may just like the comfort of your job. And so just using real estate as another kind of mode to investment. And the thing that I love about that kind of path is that say you work 30 years in your job and you want to retire, maybe you start at 25, you want to retire at 55. A lot of people these days that do that path traditionally, they're relying on a 401k. Maybe they're relying on some Social Security that they'll get at 70 years old nowadays. All that stuff that is good and that you've earned. But what happens between 55 and 65 if you want to retire early, or even after 65 and you're like, well, I'm now going to spend my savings down to zero or until I die, whichever happens first. I'm going to collect a little bit of Social Security. But what about the rest of the money, that this fun stuff you want to do in retirement? If you have 10 or 15 properties cash flowing you $500 a month, that is that. That's what sets you apart from the rest of your peers. And that's what gives you the ability to do things you want when you get to that age of retiring from your W-2. And you're just shutting off your income. And now you need something else to supplement, in my opinion.
Yeah. As we've been talking and as we've, you know, introduced you about what you do, you notice that nowhere in that introduction do we label you as, an engineer.
Right.
Currently. So talk a little bit about kind of building your portfolio to the point where you no longer were an engineer, kind of how, cause that's a scary thing for some people is, you know, I've got my W-2, I've got some properties. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to quit my W-2 and live off my
real estate. Yeah. So the challenge that I see, like crossing that bridge for a lot of people, is it does take some time. And most people look like at 1 year and like, okay, what can I make in 1 year? When really you need to be on like a 5-year time horizon or even a 10-year time horizon. So if you're starting to look at your portfolio like of one or four or zero properties right now, like don't think of what like some. Okay. So I'll step back. We listen to some podcasts and you hear about this person that went from zero to hero in like 12 months. Like that is the exception. And that is not like reality for most of us. And so you have to be on the, like be realistic about your timeline and understand what it's going to take to get there. So you don't quit halfway through. Cause a lot of people you talk to, they have like 3 or 4 rental properties and they kind of just hate it. Like they're not enjoying it because they don't really have a goal there. They're not maximizing their profits on it. They're just kind of like, yeah, I own these. I can't wait to sell them when it's time to sell them and it makes sense. But looking at this from a true passive income standpoint of truly wanting to like exit your career, whatever that is, or retire, like building up, like, what are you going to do? Like, what is your goal? $10,000 a month? Okay. Now be logical and stepping it back what you need to do and having like a buy box for you. Like for us, like I don't buy anything that doesn't net clean cash flow $200 a door after everything's all said and done. Obviously, I like to have as little bit of money in it as possible because I'm trying to scale maybe bigger than most people that are just trying to buy 10, 15, 20 properties. So back to your main question of like, how have I done this is like, so the portfolio I own now is like about 50 units. We just sold an 8 unit. So it's maybe down to like 42. And essentially what I look at is how do I not just have this as my one type of income, but how do I vary the type of income? So I do have some small multifamily. We had that 8 unit I just mentioned, 6 units, duplexes, and then some single family homes. But we vary that income because some of our stuff is an Airbnb, a short-term rental. Some of it we actually rent to the state and other basically kind of like developmentally disabled adults. So what they do is they actually rent the property from us, the state does, or these placement companies for a higher premium, and then they rent sublease to these folks. So we have some of those. It's not our only business model. And then, of course, student rentals for me personally, I own some of those. And now I have this kind of like diverse pocket of income. And I think for a lot of people, their biggest, like the scarcity mindset is that they're reliant on one source of income. And they're like, well, if all hell breaks loose, I'm going to lose everything because I only do student rentals in the college shutdown, or I only rent short-term rentals. And guess what? Short-term rentals kind of dive down and they're not making as much money now, to where for me as a conservative person, I have multiple types of levers plus business income, which I think is also like one of the best types of incomes.
Yeah. The diversification is key. Not only, I mean, and I think residential real estate is probably the most predictable, and you can be well diversified in residential across multiple locations. I think that's a huge thing we talk about. And, I think most of us started, it sounds like your story, you started in residential. Is that correct? Like you, and then maybe traded up to some other assets. Yep. I like that you talked about having a goal, Dan, because that's really, I mean, important. We have some people that just buy, I mean, I guess off a whim, real estate, like, oh, I want to own real estate without a goal. And that, like, that's okay, you know, but still those are also the people you hear about from a year later and like, well, you know, am I really like enjoying this real estate thing? No,
there was
like
a hiccup. I'm going to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. They're usually the first to like, when something happens and it's not working out perfectly, they're, you know, the most concerned. It's like, that's part of the plan, part of the game. You know, this is also a benefit of having a portfolio where you have multiple streams of income, as you mentioned. So, hey, if you got one vacancy or one attendant issue, so be it. The rest of the portfolio is performing quite well. And you would expect to have like a baseline percentage of properties having issues while the rest of the portfolio performs well. Right. Let's talk a little bit about collecting keys and fast forward to what you're doing now. It's interesting. We've known about you guys and you know, been in touch for quite some time already because your business partner, Mike, which we interviewed, I think about a year ago, was the first out of state properties he bought was with Rent to Retirement. And I think you just told us before we started the show, he bought 5 in Minnesota. It's probably been four or 5 years or possibly longer since he's had those. And then he like did a successful exit on a sub-2 deal, creative finance, which is really, really cool. We won't dive into the logistics of that, but I just love, this is almost like one of those stories where, and obviously we can't attribute your guys' success all to us, but I mean, there's a small part of that, because if Mike's buying multiple properties out of state and then like years later we come back and you guys are doing all these cool things in real estate.
Yep.
I absolutely love that, you know, so. But let's talk about collecting keys and some of the things you guys got going on. Like, what is that? Tell us what you're doing now.
Yeah, if you'll entertain me, can I give you I'll give you our origin story, because I do think it is fascinating. It does speak to the power of real estate. So when my partner and I partnered up together, so he had moved from a primary residence where he was working at Boeing, as a matter of fact, in the Seattle area as an engineer, hated it. He came back to Spokane where we both live now. I actually hired him into my team at the company we both worked at, and he kept that primary over there. He moved over there. He actually was my very first tenant. And anyways, he kept that primary for a couple years, but he quit his job. Like, he basically quit working for me overnight, like had an epiphany. He was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, he is like, this is not me. I'm not a corporate employee. I'm definitely not an engineer. Well, what he realized is, he's like, I need cash flow. I don't have any income. And he was trying to figure out what he wanted to do. Long story short, one of the things he ended up doing was taking that primary that he used to own that he had rented for a couple of years and 1031 that into those properties through you guys, because he needed cash flow. So he went from a non-cash flowing market or a small cash flowing market, was able to 1031 that money into 5 properties, which you alluded to. He just this year sold on a subject to transaction where he was able to cash out a lot of equity. Because he no longer needs the cash flow and he can take that equity and reinvest it somewhere else. So that was like part of our origin story, because at that time also he was kind of muddling around real estate starting in 2018. I had mentioned I started in 2016 and we were kind of like working parallel, and he was just trying to figure things out from like an income standpoint and I was just trying to build wealth. Well, in 2020, we came together and started a off-market direct-to-seller real estate business where we were doing wholesaling, flipping, and buy and hold. Our main intention was always buy and hold to get that cash flow and build the wealth, but we would wholesale properties we didn't like or flip things opportunistically. And we did that here locally in Spokane. And then in 2021, we were like, hey, let's go somewhere else and do this too. So we went to Knoxville, Tennessee. Before we knew anything about Knoxville, we just looked at it from the stats. We're like, oh, this is a great place. I had no idea that it was adjacent to the Smoky Mountains. I had no idea the University of Tennessee was there. it's actually a really great spot to invest in. I wish we would have stayed there, but we were doing direct to seller. We were basically sending people letters, cold calling and texting and trying to find deals. We wholesaled some stuff down there and did some flips down there completely remote. And then we decided to pull back from that and moved into Chicago remotely with some partners and other people we knew. And at that point in time, people were like, wow, it seems like you guys can do this anywhere. Could you do this for us? We're like, yeah, probably. Let's try it. And then that became our business model. And our first client was actually up in Augusta, Maine. And we basically came in and stood up his marketing business, the marketing arm of his business, and provided him a salesperson to where all he had to do was give us the pricing that he needed for that local market to buy that for him to make a profit. And so essentially, we marketed to the areas he wanted to. We would take in his leads, and then our sales team would negotiate with the sellers. And on the output of that, he got a contract to purchase this property from us to his business. And he showed a lot of good success. And from there, we've gone to probably about 40 or 50 different markets. And we're actively right now working in about a few dozen markets across the country doing that same service for other people.
So just to summarize that, though, because you covered a lot.
Yep.
And thank you for that. But you basically will come in and, like, you have this established system defined under off-market houses that you will basically, in any market where you can help people negotiate, right, or yep. find deals. And these are usually, are these deals that need work, that need to be rehabbed, or you can either, so they're usually maybe some dilapidated houses that you can get below market value that you can wholesale or renovate.
Pretty much. And it'll depend on the client of what they want, because we have some clients that they just want to buy anything that is rentable or that they can rent because their portfolio, that's all they care about is portfolio size and quantity. And so they will take turnkey stuff that they may have to leave some money into because there's no opportunity for a refinance. Or they'll take something that needs to be fixed up and then do the full refinance after they get all of the market rents in place and all that stuff. And then we have some clients that are just flippers, and so they're 100%. They want the distress. They want the thing at 50% on value, on market value when it's fixed up, so they can go in there and put a bunch of money into it, make it pretty, make it HDTV, and then sell it off to a retail client.
How do you partner with them? Is this a paid service, or you take a portion of equity? How does your business work?
It's actually, it's pretty simple for us. We try to, because we built the business of what we would want to do, and that is like leave all the upside to the client. So they pay us, it's a service agreement with us. They pay us an amount per month to run all the systems. And then the marketing, they buy through us, which they get major discounts because we have good pricing now that we are on such scale. So they get a discounted dollar amount for their marketing, and then they just pay us a flat single fee on every transaction we close for them. And so again, they get all the upside on every deal that they keep. We're not trying to take ownership in these properties. We're not trying to take a percentage of them. We want them to have the best of the best of the world on either end of this.
So what have you noticed among your investors who have been successful as opposed to the investors who, I'm sure you have some that have flamed out.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you notice is the key difference between those two?
Yeah, the key difference in this is it's so funny how it applies just across the board, not even related to our business, is the ones that are willing to recognize and have the ability to recognize opportunity and put the work in. The hard work in anything is the thing that separates people from like the good people or the people that don't ever get good to like the great people that stay in it. Like that first client we had, he's a bookmark, and now he's basically operating us as a complete separate business. He's making multi-six figures a year on that business, and he's still operating his other stuff that he's doing. So we're just a whole another stream. And the reason why he's done so well is because he's willing to go and look at like, how can I make this work? Like, where's the opportunity here? And some folks, they're in a cookie cutter box, and they just have a harder time recognizing opportunity.
So definitely work ethic. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer. What else? I mean, one thing that I found, for example, I think that's certainly true of running this business in my own real estate portfolio that I think that's really important that I found is being able to make decisions quickly and being able to accept risk. Those are something that like every single day, every decision is a level of risk. And if I don't make a decision on something today, it's going to be compounded over time with other decisions. You got to be able to execute a decision. There could be buying a property, putting in an offer. What Do you think there's truth to that? Anything else?
100%. 100%. And that's what I mean by recognizing opportunity is people like inherently there's risk in any type of investing that we do, whether that's investing in a stock, investing in people, investing in properties. And so people, they let that risk overcome them. And I always say like inaction is like the worst thing you can do. That's what's going to make you lose money and anything. Right. If you have a leaky faucet and you're just like, I don't want to deal with that. Guess what? That's going to cause you a lot more heartache down the road when it deteriorates your vanity and your floor and all that sort of stuff. So taking action is key. And people just, they get so caught up in the risk. They want to buy real estate. They want to do it, but they can't find something that fits their ideal burr or ideal perfect burr box, whatever that looks like. They're not willing to put in the extra effort to go the extra mile to dig into it. And they're just, to your point, like they're just not able to like understand the asymmetrical upside decisions where I have to take a risk here, but the upside's so much better.
So what are you doing like in your portfolio now? I mean, are you just buying everywhere? Are you focusing on certain areas and kind of what is the future of your portfolio, yeah. You think?
That's a great question because at the time we're recording this, I'm really focused on what does 2024 look like for me. So 2023, we've been focused on building that model. And so we haven't really been focused on our portfolio. We have one property that's in escrow essentially right now from a personal acquisition standpoint. So we're not going into all these other markets and trying to buy properties for ourselves. But I'm looking heavily at like, how can I continue to grow my passive income while also growing my, what I would call like active income, my vertical income, where I'm actually in my business paying myself. Because I do want the tax benefits, and I do want the benefits, appreciation, depreciation, all that stuff over time. And so I'm actually actively looking at different markets right now where I can stand up our operation that we're doing for other people and run it for myself because the market I'm in, it's harder to come by deals. I'm in a very much so appreciation market. And so underwriting deals to get the cash flow numbers I want, I'm not going to be able to buy one or two properties a month anymore. I need to go to another market. And so I'm just in the process of analyzing that and making sure that's what I want to do.
Did I just hear you say, Dan, that based on the limiting factors in your own market, you may have to invest out of state where there's better opportunity?
Absolutely. Yep.
Exactly. I think we know a guy I can help with that.
I've heard you guys know some people.
Since you help people find deals and negotiate deals across the country, I mean, what's your state of the union on the market and what does this next year look like? There's been a lot of talk about interest rates probably, started to come back down and some more aggressive opinions on that. So, I mean, what does Dan think?
Yeah. So here's what I do know based on being all over the country is the West Coast continues to be a super challenging market to be in. I'm in Washington, Oregon is challenging on the actual I-5 corridor, California. We all hear that it's a challenging market to buy anything. And just in general, you get in the Northeastern markets, there's opportunity up there, but the Southeast, Florida, the Sun Belt, is great. But like when you go over to like the West, like Arizona, I mean, it's so expensive. And like the Phoenix, the part of the desert most people want to live. Texas is obviously blowing up. There's some great pockets in there where we have clients. But I would say Southeast market wise is continuously like this whole year has been a great market. There's tons of opportunity there. Great cash flow. And I just don't see it. I don't see it slowing down right now. As far as interest rates go, I think that they will come down a little bit. I have this sense that there's going to be continuous strong demand for real estate going into 2024 because of that.
So likely no. I mean, so what I'm hearing you say is very geographic dependent, definitely some markets. And we would agree with that 100%. Yep. We're most active in the Southeast where, there's still in a lot of cases, double digit appreciation and strong rental growth in some of these areas, especially when you look at new construction. Dan, as we wrap up here, I want to hear some advice from you on two different people. I want to hear first the person that is, sitting on the sidelines that is maybe trying to soak up all this information, but they're not the person that they've had trouble making a decision, right, getting into the game, but they like real estate. They want to get started. What advice would you have for that person? And then the second person is someone who has been in real estate a little bit, and they're in the position that you were previously and Mike, where you guys make that transition. They're wanting to make that transition into real estate full time. What would you tell them? Could you tell us those two different pieces of advice?
Yeah. So for the new investor, one of the things I just want to say is like, just get started. You got to do it, but that's not super tactical. That's not super helpful. What I would say is like, understand what you need to do to like make that first purchase, that first acquisition, whatever that looks like. And the first place that always starts with is like, you need to analyze deals, and you're going to analyze so many deals. This is a numbers game. Go to places where people are doing what you want to do. Obviously, meetups, listen to podcasts. Tell people you're a real estate investor and tell you're a real estate investor, right? That's how it works. And talking about this, I have deals that come to me in my hometown because of people I've networked with years ago. And that is a lead magnet that still trickles towards me. And I just walked a property last week from a probate attorney I didn't talk to in a year. And she said, hey, I have this other family member. It's a unique situation. I know you handle unique situations. Can you go look at it?
Going back to your story, when you're in a cubicle and you hear someone talk about real estate, get up and go talk to them.
Go talk to them. Yeah. If you know this is where you want to be, or you're thinking that's where you want to be, do it. But then back to my earlier point is like, what are the things you have to do to get into the position you want to be? And just start small. Like say, I want to buy one property. I want to buy two properties this year. You have to do certain actions. Set those. You may not know how much those are. And that's why I'm saying go get around people that are doing what you want to do, because you may find that you need to analyze 150 deals to find one deal that comes through. You may need to look at like stuff you guys are doing. Look at all those deals and say, does this make sense for me? And if it does, what do I need to do to make this happen? Because you may not have the money to invest right now. So what can you do to get that down payment or whatever that is? And it's really, to sum it up, it's being clear on your objective and then breaking it down into small steps to get there.
Okay. And what about the individual that is struggling with wanting to change the trajectory of their career path, being mm-hmm. full-time real estate, and they're nervous about taking that leap?
Right. Okay. So for that person, I would say like the grass really is greener, honestly, in that situation, because there's so much opportunity in real estate. It doesn't have to be just one box, one size fits all. So that it is truly there, and you need to understand. And this is something that I continue to fight with as I learn about myself and reflect and those sorts of things on what I truly want in life, is like, you need to truly understand what it is you want and why you want it, and kind of know who you are to the core. For me, the big thing that I knew I needed and I wanted is financial security, because I didn't have that growing up. I grew up, you know, humble beginnings. A lot of us are that way. And we just want to know that our paycheck is going to be there and that it's not going to go away. And so if that's for you, what do you need to do to get to that point? Where are you at now? Maybe you own 5 properties. You're like, I am struggling to get to 10. I'll tell you what, it's really hard to double your portfolio. Like growing real estate is challenging. But understanding who and what you need is like so valuable in this, because you said it earlier, Zach, there's those people that like they buy one property and then they're like a year later, right? Like they're out of it, and like they don't, like something happens and they don't want to deal with it. And it's like, that is the person that does not know what their goals are, where they're trying to go. They don't know who they are at the core. They're just doing it because they heard it on a podcast and they think they should buy real estate. But that's not going to get you. It's not going to get you out of your W-2. It's just not.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned whenever you buy properties, the requirement that you have, I believe, was at least $200 mm-hmm. Per door. Do you have a favorite metric whenever you look at real estate?
So I don't, like, because it is somewhat market dependent, because I can go, and I found this early on, is like people talk about 1% rule. You go into, like, I was in rural Ohio, like just like Springfield, Ohio in particular. And people won't even touch deals at 1%. They're like, it better be 2.5% deal, right? And so I learned that that's not my best metric. In my home market, I can use that metric because I'm like, damn, that's a good deal. But what I do is I kind of just actively know what it's going to cost for a mortgage per $100,000. And then I know, I very conservatively, this doesn't have to be the right numbers you use, but 5% vacancy, 5% maintenance, 5% capital improvement, kind of escrowing that money. And then if I know what it is, and 10% property management. So that's 25% of my gross rents are going to go away. That's a super conservative number for me, right? And then if I know PITI property, if I know my property, my principal, interest, tax, and insurance payment every month, I can quickly say, hey, per 100,000, I know I'm going to spend this much. And here, if I'm going to take 25% of gross rents away, that's where I'm at. And then if it gets close to that, I'm like, okay, there's something here. Because that's like a perfect deal for me, right? And so I think you can adjust those numbers, those percentages, if you're really dialed in, and just use a calculator. But if I'm just somebody sending me a deal in my town, I'm going to look at it just like that.
All right. Well, fantastic. Well, the website is collectingkeys.com. That's collectingkeys.com. The social media handles, I believe, are all InvestorManDan.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep. Instagram, I'm the most active, but you can hit me up on any of the platforms.
Yeah. So that's InvestorManDan or collectingkeys.com. Dan, really appreciate you joining us today. It's been a great conversation. Look forward to seeing what you're doing in the future. To everybody else, if you want to check out some inventory for yourself, you can head over to renttoretirement.com, see the turnkey inventory we have there available on our website. And if you have any questions that you want us to answer on future episodes, please send them to podcast@renttoretirement.com. That's podcast@renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourselves today. Talk to you on the next episode.